content isn't advertising. The difference between content and advertising is ads, we hate them. We have to endure them in order to get to the thing that we want to watch.
Yeah. Yep.
Content, we want to watch.
Yep.
If you don't want to watch content, it's advertising.
Mm.
Content has to have, I believe, value. And the way it has value is because it's either inspirational, educational, aspirational, you know, informative. It has to have some value to the consumer to make them want to engage with it. Hey guys, welcome to the Dan Brophy Show. I am really excited to share with you a chat with Reese Livingston, who has come up in the fitness space and is building himself a fitness media empire. I had the joy of chatting with him while I was down in Melbourne recently. It's one of the best ways in which I've broken down how I got my start, so my very own origin story. I never really talk about my own career in content creation, and there's some really pragmatic tools that I thought people who enjoy my podcast when I interview other people might be able to benefit from. And as someone who started a business 5 years ago, I have often really leant in to turning what I love into what I do. And now I'm actually turning my focus towards facilitating that for other people. There are two great reasons to check out the new danbrophy.com website. The first one is called the Vision Planner. And I wanted to create a really simple goal setting technique for my most easily distracted, time poor friends, of which I have many. And often when I check in with people, I ask them what they're working on, what their goals for the future are, and I'm always surprised that so few people have a process around how to articulate their goals and have a vision for what they wanted to create for themselves. It's really important when you are in a state of transition to articulate what success looks like for you so you know what to move towards. So the Vision Planner is now available for $7.77. It's an introductory price. It'll usually be around $22. Over 200 people have done it so far. So many people have come back to me and said that they have just loved the process of doing it. And I even had someone today tell me that she left her corporate job and has become a novelist since doing the practice. But ultimately, it's not even about quitting your day job. It's about integrating skills around the life that you want to have for yourself back into the work that you're doing so that you can get more energy from your creativity and things that ultimately light you up and bring you joy. Secondly, and most excitedly, I'm now offering creative coaching via my website, which could be anything from how you show up in a new creative career that you have never done before, all the way through to having a finished creative product and needing some assistance with how to market and sell that product, and everything in between. So if you've thought about seeing a creative coach, but you don't quite know what that process could look like, I now offer free 15-minute jam sessions via my website, danbrophy.com, so that we can chat via Zoom about what your creative project might look like. And from there, see how I can work with you to help you bring it to fruition. And that speaks nicely to why I started this podcast in the first place, in terms of encouraging people to turn what they love into what they do. And if you haven't seen them already, on my Instagram at Dan Brophy, a couple of times a week, I share creative thought starters to just use as a little bit of fuel to your creative process fire. And you can see all the previous ones that have been posted in my Reels section. But now, please enjoy my chat with Reese Livingston from the podcast From Lambs to Lions.
I'm joined here by Dan Brophy, someone I've met very, very recently, but I'm very excited to share his story and give you guys a bit of an insight as to what real media management looks like, what branding looks like, and how you can get the best out of it. Dan Brophy, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Man, let's give everyone a little bit of a more formalized introduction as to who you are, what you do. Because as I said, you've only just come into, I guess, my stratosphere of knowledge, and I've only just met you. So give everyone and myself a more detailed explanation as to what you do.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, so for the past, let's say 2016, I formalized my offering from having been a gun for hire content specialist. So between finishing film school in 2006 and 2016, I was a shooter, producer, gun for hire. I would work on everything from Australia's Next Top Model as like their digital guy who would make all the content that would live around the TV show, all the way through to someone that agencies would
pay to come along and create content, usually alongside another operation. So sometimes it would be a fashion shoot and I would do the fashion film that would live alongside the stills for a fashion brand, or I would come up with something that was a video layer to be added onto another production layer, or sometimes be the dominant force of a campaign if it was content first as opposed to TV commercial first.
Okay, cool. So you were like somewhat like brand recognition, brand awareness early days.
And often, you know, for that juicy period of content becoming from being quite a last resort or a last thought to being one of the first thoughts, I kind of rode that wave. So I came out of film school at a time when no one really cared about content. I don't even know if that word even came into practice until maybe 2014.
Yeah.
YouTube was registered as a business in 2005. I finished uni 2006, and then GFC happened in 2008. So when I came out of film school, traditionally you'd go, okay, do I want to be a feature filmmaker? Do I want to be a TV commercial director? But I noticed a lot of those regular career trajectories started to become a bit slim when everything in the world just slowed down around 2008-09. So I found myself going after the sort of jobs that no one else really wanted, doing those 2 to 5K content gigs. And at one stage, I noticed that they started to become a part of the conversation for brands a bit earlier in the process, as opposed to being this afterthought, which they always used to be.
Yeah. When you say a 2 to 5K content gig, back in the day, we'll make you feel a little bit old, back in the day when that was a thing as far as like picking up the crumbs, so to speak, in the content world, what did a 2 to 5K job look like as opposed to now?
Well, in 2006, 7, 8, when people recognized the need to have, because usually I would just be booked as like a behind the scenes videographer or stills was never my number one focus. I would always hire a stills guy to work alongside me, but video as like a videographer was what I was called. It was always behind the scenes, but usually that behind the scenes went from being something that would show the process and actually show people in makeup, you know, show the lights, show the sets. Then eventually what it became was them going, okay, we've got this, you know, $100,000 stills campaign with this supermodel, and it's going to be in store windows and on big billboards around town. But then we've got this thing called social media circa 2007, 8, which needs stuff to fill it. Yep. Maybe we'll just get Dan to come along and his buddy who's a stills photographer can just shoot a bunch of stuff, and then that'll just become what we use to fill our social platforms. So what they would usually get for 2K, I learned to edit because I realized it was better for me to not have to outsource that as someone who was able to just manage it all myself. And then as I went, I kind of onboarded a few more skills. And then by the time the jobs got a bit juicier, when they realized there was some value in having someone who was really able to deliver a bunch of stuff that could potentially set up a fashion brand for 3 months of a seasonal rollout.
Yeah.
It became obvious that giving me a bit more budget and allowing me to have a bit more of a seat at the table early on in the creative process. Because my number one frustration was the shoot would already be locked in, planned, locations would be signed off, talent would be booked, and then they'd have this expectation for just adding me in the night before the shoot. And I'd go, but your talent that you've booked has never performed in front of a moving camera before, and you're expecting them to do an interview series behind the scenes to fill up your social channels for the next 3 months with someone who has no idea what they're doing. Why don't you just have a chat to me when you're conceiving of the concept, so that then I can give you a couple of things to keep in mind when locking in your talent, for example.
Even just acting as like a soundboard to like flesh out ideas, like. Even now, just talking about, I know it's in hindsight, but logistically, it just doesn't make sense. Like, oh, let's add this thing in. I guess it's the world we live in now. Like, let's add this content thing in as an ad hoc basis later. It just it seems a bit disjointed.
And oftentimes, the people, those signing off on the process and ultimately writing the checks, are only ever going to do things based on what they've always done. Hmm. So the idea of some upstart who's in his early 20s coming along and saying, hey, here's how you should rethink how you do production, is only ever going to be listened to if there's a pain point relating to them having not done it and therefore suffered the consequences of not doing that.
So it's opportunity cost. It's like, okay, there's this opportunity, but what's it going to cost or what's it going to save? And realistically, man, that would have been such a hard sales gig to be like, oh, well, I can help you identify this pain that they don't even know is there.
And often what I would do is I would say, just so you know, I foresee this problem coming up, and they of course wouldn't listen to it. And then over time that, you know, I found the best way to present the prospective concern ahead of time, and then slowly was being listened to. And I mean, now, you know, content is of course the number one thing. So actually, back to my original backstory, 2016, I realized that I couldn't really do as much as I wanted to do. And I was kind of living from one job to another. So I thought, if I can just outsource the editing to someone else, which is my most labor intensive part of the process, I can then free myself up for the parts that I'm really good at, which is coming up with the ideas, selling the concept, being on set, jamming with the clients on what they need, and keeping them really happy along the way.
Yep.
And then I won't get bogged down by the most time consuming part, which is, you know, that the edit is so, post-production is so grueling, even though I love it and it can be quite a beautiful process. But 2016 was the first time I paid someone to take that load off me. And I then went, okay, well now I have a company because I'm hired someone, and now it's got to have an ABN and a name and and so then from over the past 5 years, that has ebbed and flowed between me and one to me and five. And in that process, it's allowed me to do up to kind of at its biggest, it was kind of four or five huge companies. So all their social media output, every single thing that went live for some major food companies, for example, and we would shoot everything, come up with the concepts, work on the strategy so that they could get as much bang for buck and hit their KPIs. And then I would still do those beautiful, fun, glamorous, fashion-y things that would usually be like a month sprint around a job.
Yep.
But now post-COVID, I'm working out what that 2.0 version looks like, and is it going to be great to build up that roster of lots of moving parts around entire social media output for brands again, even though that was had its pros and cons, of course, or do I focus on, you know, the variety of going into a job and just having a really fun sprint for 1 to 3 months on something?
I think that probably brings us full circle to where you are now in just like media management, brand, and so on. Where do you feel like right now? I'll ask you one question, it'll probably lead into a bunch, but right now, where do you spend most of your time in the media space? Like doing what? And then how can we maybe apply that to probably a smaller scale of business, and what should they do to replicate?
Okay. So, give me a reminder, because it just for who's listening and what their pain points are. Is their pain point just like, hey, I need to really nail content? What's the most efficient way that I can do that?
So this episode will be coming off the back of two marketing-based conversations. So our audiences are already, I guess, primed to know that they need to market and get in front of people, but they probably don't know how, right? And they probably don't know exactly what to look for, because this is probably also something that I'll state, and we might have a differing opinion here, which is cool. I'd love to discuss it. We'd probably be able to find some common ground in the middle at least. I'm pretty heavy on the opinion that branding is it's a fine art, but it's very hard to track if you're actually doing it well, because like you can create this new color scheme, you can create a new logo, you can rebrand, you can do high quality, low quality, user generated, etc. Unless there's a direct KPI attached to that of did it work and how well did it work, it's very hard to tell if it's somewhere you should put more effort. So I think like probably leads into a question is where do you see branding as a hierarchy of importance in the whole, you know, business landscape? And how do we execute on it the most? Because if we highlight a pain point for the people I talk to the most, and probably the people that do listen the most, are people that they're just lost in the scope of oversaturation and bullshit in the area of media and marketing. They don't know where to go.
I mean, there's so much noise in the space, isn't there? I mean, I feel like branding is such a broad term, because it really is. It has so many touch points and so many things can be branding, which is what makes it a hard thing to map, because there are lots of data points that you can use to really assess branding. And I think some of the most effective and impactful branding is actually aura, where you have an experience of a brand that hits you in a way that allows you to, it encourages loyalty, and you're not necessarily clicking to buy, you know, you're engaging because it actually is quite charming, and you're potentially even talking about it in a way that doesn't give the business mappable points on how effective it's been. So I think for someone to get their head around what would work for them and their clientele is for them to, of course, just pay attention to the things that their peers who are nailing it, and for them to do an assessment of the people in their ecosystem who are doing things that are exciting them, even if they don't know what it is that excites them. So often when I'll collaborate with a client and, you know, this is my Insta behind brophy.media, so you can kind of see examples of some like really big brands. Like this is Nat Barr, who's like a Sunrise host, who's doing a skincare company. We did a really fun rebrand for an underwear company that wanted to become pan queer in its representation. So that was just a beautiful heart in the right place example of a business just Amazing. Trying to, you know, speak to everyone equally. There's like sugar-free chocolate brands and Sea Folly, which has like, there's some stuff with Lara Worthington that we shot for them further down the thing. And this was Daily Jocks decided to do that pan queer offering in a, and I presented them this sort of Calvin Klein, but you know, with a really genuinely diverse portfolio of talent. And I've done lots of stuff with fashion brands. I just want to have create activations that are beautiful and give them stuff to fill their channels with for a long time. What I would always talk about when it comes to finding a story for a brand to tell is everyone has the same platforms that they all use. It's always the same handful of five or six places. You know, you're going to see things, TikTok, Insta, Twitter, maybe website, you know, there's basically like the usual suspects that everyone is playing in, but that doesn't necessarily mean everyone should do the same thing, because the way in which your customer shows up to that platform for you might be really different to how that same person, that same human being shows up to the same platform for another thought leader or brand. So the way in which what they come to you for should really dictate how you serve them and how you deliver on that experience in that space. So I imagine that a lot of people who listen to this might be in the fitness space, or they might be in spaces that have the intention to interact with real humans in a real way.
Yes.
And so instantly, one of the things that people overlook when it comes to how they show up digitally is, how do you show up IRL and how can you replicate that experience digitally so that you have a genuinely true experience that you like to offer if you're sitting opposite someone? Use the platforms. Don't let the platforms dictate how you should show up within them. Let your actual customer service experience dictate how you use the platforms to show up within those.
That's really interesting, man, because I think so many people are letting, you know, we live in such an external world where everything, it is noisy and there is so much going on, especially in like social media and stuff, that people can kind of fall into the trap of just almost copying what they see, but not actually seeing if it actually translates to them, their brand, their business, and what they do in service.
Totally. Actually, I'll give you a really practical example. I did some consultancy for that underwear brand that did the pan queer thing.
Yep.
Do you want to click on that? Actually, have a look at their actual Instagram page. It's Daily Jocks is the name of the company. And I'll show you an example of exactly what I meant when if you go to their most recent, they just took on a new social media manager. He he was someone who started on the shop floor, and he was evolving in his role to working out how to do their socials for them.
Yep.
And so he was getting his head around how to tell the story of the brand in social.
Yep.
And one of the ways I broke it down to him to allow him to understand it was, I took him through the process of, when someone walks into the store, when they see clothing on the rack, how do they interact with it? What does he need them to understand before they make a sale, before he converts them to a sale? So he needs them to understand that a particular cut is available in multiple colors and multiple styles, and here's how it sits as part of a range. And if you like it as a brief, maybe you'd also be interested in it as shorts.
Yep.
And so I basically said, why don't you map the exact journey of someone walking into the shop and what you want them to know when you say, oh, hey, what are you looking for? Oh, it's over here. And here's the different colors that it comes in. Replicate that exact experience in a triptych of three tiles on Insta.
Yep.
So as he was going through and building up his social rollout, I basically lent into his experience as someone who spent 5 years working in the store as a way for him to digitally recreate in an abstract way, but still in a way that ultimately, when people swipe in his carousels now, it shows each item in either a couple of different styles or a couple of different colors. And he then used the experience of what he wants someone to know before they want to go try something on. Because I said, basically, someone's going to look at this and then they'll either come into the store or they'll buy it on the website. So you're using Instagram as the intermediary of what you want them to know about. as if they walked into the shop.
That's interesting. So you're trying to elicit a specific direction, emotional pathway for them to go like, okay, well, I come in cold and I walk out at least warm and ready to buy. If they, even if they're just browsing, not ready to purchase, having some, it's storytelling 101.
And it's also understanding where your particular Instagram platform lives in relation to their overall user journey in that ecosystem. So for many people, Insta is not where they're going to click to buy, because Insta, of course, offers that functionality, but who does?
Yeah, very rare.
No, you actually need to be able to midwife them from waiting for a train all the way through to converting.
Yep.
And you have to imagine, all right, well, when they are coming to me, what are they coming to me for? Do they want entertainment in this moment? Do they want inspiration in this moment? Do they want to understand the brand better in this moment? Like, I know so many girls who sit in bed scrolling before they fall asleep at night, just like making boards about things they're going to buy. Mm-hmm. So all their favorite brands, I've observed, do a really great job of making that try before you buy, kind of build up your wish list of things you're going to eventually, you know, buy when you're in that moment of like, I need to treat myself to something nice. They make that experience, they tailor the social media experience to being the equivalent of going into the shop and trying things on.
Man, I don't know if you can see, but the wheels in my head are already turning of just like, okay, this makes sense. And I want to really pinpoint something for everyone at home. Let's talk about customer journey, because I imagine that's part of your process when you work with someone on their brand and like looking at their media rollout, what the customer journey actually looks like. How do you kind of build that, or at least get someone to be aware of their customer's journey? Because a lot of people, I feel like, are probably just left in the dark of like, oh, client comes in, they buy.
Like, and it's just product, customer buy product.
It's just not that way.
I make money.
Yeah, money, enter account, good. Mm. Yeah, no. Like, so what does that look like as far as the mapping out process for you when you are working with someone?
I always love to jam on that process of, the thing is, people, like I said before, people don't truly value their lived experience and what they know about their business from another platform or another experience in order to then use the digital platform, digital ecosystem as a way to replicate what is ultimately a proven model. Mm-hmm. You need to adapt it for the platform, but considerations would include knowing who your target market is, and based on how your what their demo is, you're going to get a sense of what platforms they use. You know, if you're targeting over 45s versus if you're targeting under 25s, they're probably going to lean into different platforms.
Of course, yeah.
And once you get a sense of who your target market is, and you get a sense of what their habits are in terms of social media usage, then you also think about, well, what do they look to that platform for? And just like, I mean, everyone. Even a couple of years ago, the idea of that sort of user engagement funnel was a new concept to me, and it really allowed me to see everything in those terms. But I'm sure you guys already know about it, but just in case that's you don't,
going, yeah.
Basically, if you were to type into Google user in, you know, sales conversion funnel is probably the easiest way to find what I'm talking about. But it doesn't even have to relate to sales as in a traditional handing over of cash. User engagement to convert someone from, once they're, if you think of a funnel in five stages, at the top of the funnel, or like outside the funnel, is people who have no idea who you are or what your services are or what you do. And all the way at the bottom of the funnel is someone who's converted because they have bought the thing.
One thing I'll say, I'll just pause there for you, because I want to really get people to understand this. It's not necessarily sales in handing over cash, but in today's day and age, attention is currency.
Yes. And someone who has downloaded like a free PDF of me as part of my creative coaching business is a conversion as far as I'm concerned, because 100%. They're in my ecosystem. I've got their email address. I'm going to be retargeting them some value. If
this inverted pyramid of funnel system just funnels into another one that's bigger and bigger. And then it slowly comes down into this thing where they're buying at a higher rate, at a higher purchase rate. Lifetime value is excessive, et cetera. But
and whether you realize it or not, you are part of multiple funnels by multiple brands currently.
100%. So carry on. This top end of the funnel, where
top
does that-
end of the funnel means you are, okay, let's look at, let's anchor it to something real. So, I have just recently created a free goal setting tool for my coaching business. I'm kind of getting into creative coaching, working with brands and individuals about how they can use creativity as an ideation tool, a wellness practice, that sort of thing.
Yep.
People don't know that I do this because I have previously been known as just a content creator, as someone who has always just done one sort of role. So all the people who I've ever contacted before for my other business, I'm going to recontact them and let them know that I now am someone who is a consultant who can work with their teams to use creativity better.
Great.
And but they don't know that I really do this. So currently they're sitting outside the funnel. The moment I reach out to them, because I've got their email address from business transactions over the past 5 years, I am able to let them know that there is a service based on something that they previously had no idea about. So they come one notch down into the funnel. Then if I was to offer them a chance to experience what I'm talking about via some sort of free offer, like a free PDF to give you an idea about what my philosophy and experience of working with me could be like, and you come through, click through to this link, and then you download that thing, then you're one notch down because you've actually engaged with my new information. You don't just know that I offer it. You've now onboarded it in a way that has some resonance and some meaning to you.
Yeah, you've taken some of it in, yeah.
If you then really like that experience and it's had value for you and you come back to the website again because I've targeted you one more time with a reminder that there's actually a $10 version of that that'll give you even more value, then you're even further down the funnel. You might come and check it out. You might not click to buy, but you're at least engaging with some of the paid offerings. And of course, due to things like Facebook Pixel and ways in which you can ultimately map a user's journey and retarget them specific bits of information based on what they've touched on your website previously or even through your link tree, you can actually reach people at various stages of the funnel in order to give them information that's relevant to their stage in the journey.
And you can even, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but even through like email marketing for people that are like maybe not engaging in paid media as far as like Facebook, through email marketing, look at open rates. And if they've not opened this, they can go to this. If they have, they go somewhere else. Like, you can take them down different funnels that close that gap of engagement.
Exactly. I know that both Squarespace and MailChimp are actually using these terms now and offering you opt-in to pay more so that you can categorize the people on your mailing list to then create a user journey for an unpaid email experience.
Yeah.
And then if, for example, at the bottom of my funnel is like a monthly subscription-based coaching service because it's so resonant with them, what I've offered in a free capacity, in a minor paid capacity, and now in a bigger paid capacity, my funnel might have been designed to drive business towards a subscription. Mm-hmm. And that is an example of how someone can move from not even knowing that I even do the thing all the way through to being a paid subscriber.
Absolutely. So that's where, like, we can look at this as far as coming back to this as like customer journey. What brings them into that network, that casting that wide net, is one thing that you said there is that the social media platform wherever this demographic leans into is not necessarily the biggest portion of the ecosystem. It's a part of the ecosystem. So knowing that where that fits in their journey so that you can actually use that as a part of the funnel and actually also probably even reinforce the decision to come back into the funnel.
Yeah, and actually this is a really great point. You have to, I always liked it. One of the biggest commandments series that I had to try and instill with clients was content isn't advertising. The difference between content and advertising is ads, we hate them. We have to endure them in order to get to the thing that we want to watch.
Yeah. Yep.
Content, we want to watch.
Yep.
If you don't want to watch content, it's advertising.
Mm.
Content has to have, I believe, value. And the way it has value is because it's either inspirational, educational, aspirational, you know, informative. It has to have some value to the consumer to make them want to engage with it. And if they have to be, if they're just in sitting through your content in order to get to the thing that they really want, then it's advertising.
Yeah.
And so the aim of the game when creating a content experience for your customers is, how do I seduce them into actively wanting my content? What am I giving them that is so much value that they really want it?
Yeah. And here's probably a question for you then. Because what I hear in that is, how can we make advertising feel like content? How can we make it not feel like this droning fucking thing that takes so long to get through to get to the actual, you know, pot of gold at the end of the rainbow? How do we create advertising that feels like content? Is that a thing that you've kind of experimented with?
I mean, it gets into semantics as to exactly when it transitions from one to another. But I think you can definitely, you know, there are cross-pollinations. Content needs to convert. Otherwise, why are you doing it? So in that way, it mirrors the advertising experience. But I think it's about a mindset from the creator as to a commitment to a value add is the number one differentiator for me. Yep. And I think when it comes to advertisers who are choosing to embrace some of the content models. I mean, wouldn't it be great if advertisers were committed to giving value to their consumer beyond just like sale,
shit. Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah. And so as anyone here who's probably going to be leaning into organic content creation to push growth of a community and then potentially doing some paid advertising, paid content to drive some sort of conversion or possibly target people who otherwise they can't get access to organically, it's actually really great for you to spend a large amount of time in the nailing your organic offering, because if you're able to offer so much value that people actively really want it because you're not pushing it with money, then by the time you do push it with money, you know that you've got something really worth promoting.
Yeah, and you can actually, I guess, split test it more appropriately that, if it's worked organically and it doesn't work paid, there's a disconnect. And if that's not hitting, perhaps maybe you're not dialing into the right market, maybe you're not hitting the correct lookalike audiences, etc. If it's worked with people you know that are already in that market and want to buy.
Absolutely. And you and I both have jammed on our appreciation for Alex Hormozi. Yeah. He's such a guru in this space for so many reasons, but I think number one, because he really values the user experience.
Yes.
And I think he first and foremost it sounds to me like he had so many runs on the board IRL, sitting opposite someone and jamming with them about what their pain points are, what they really need in order to give value. I can never even imagine someone giving as much brilliant free knowledge away as he gives it away on all of his channels. And I feel like there's something that any content creator can take example of, which is if you don't have to worry about giving away the secret herbs and spices, because at the end of the day, like, no one's going to go and open up a competitive chicken shop.
Yeah.
And if they do, good luck to them, because it's not going to be your chicken shop. So you have to have generosity at the core of your offering. And whether you're speaking to content creators or speaking to people about their fitness journey or it's really about going, how can I improve the lives of these participants and create a journey that makes them want to show up to my content, because it's so awesome.
Yeah. I think with regards to Hormozi, like, he's got the perfect, I guess, combination of herbs and spice of, like, he knows his shit. He knows what's going on. It's all very, very tactical, knowing, I guess, having looked into him. But it comes across very organic, very almost lackadaisy, just chill.
Totally. Like, isn't it amazing that push and pull between being somewhat contrived, because clearly this guy is a total control freak and everything is very considered, yet it's all got this sort of like, I'm just a dude who's just, trying a few things out. Give this a go.
Yeah.
It's a beautifully measured experience. And I think even from that, you can kind of get a sense of the push and pull between tailoring a user journey so that people are put at ease by how easeful you are.
Yeah.
Even if it's like a duck whose legs are pedaling extra fast under the water.
Of course, of course. So let's use him as an example, really good example. Obviously, he's trying to, his user or client acquisition process or user journey, for example, customer journey, so to speak, is he's all trying to gear everyone to try and go, if they've got a business big enough, to go to acquisition.com, become part of their portfolio company. But to do that, he needs personal brand to create trust and like longevity in that space, because if it's not, because realistically they're a private equity firm, right? That's what they're doing. If he didn't have trust, people are going to assume he's going to come in and take a major percentage of their business and then just legally throw them out. But that's not what they do. They take I don't know if you've looked at it too much, they take a minority stakeholding. So it's very small part to create a large upscale potential. So on a legal term, they have no pull of what happens in the company. They can't actually decide, as like, they can't pull the rug from out underneath of any of the people they work with. So in normal aspects, when it comes to like, I guess acquiring equity in a business or acquiring ownership, it can be very, I guess, sticky. It can get a bit sticky. And so his customer journey is like completely geared away from that. How can we, let's bring this back to a normal person. You see him as the example. He's taking people that don't like him, know him or trust him, getting them to do so, and then hopefully getting them to give them a part of their baby, right? Like, how do we actually get to the point of like smaller business, build up no like trust factor, execute, brand, and get them to buy? What's like, how do we go through that pipeline in a normal person circumstance, do you think?
Going on, everyone. Hope you're well. I won't keep you too long. I know you're hopefully enjoying the podcast. And if you are, let us know. It would be really greatly appreciated if you can jump on, give us a quick 5-star review. You don't even need to stop listening to the show. If you're on Spotify, you can do it in less than 10 seconds. And it does help the show grow a lot. It helps us, you know, get a bit of confirmation bias that we're doing the right thing. And just to say thank you, if you guys do that, we're going to be picking one person every month to guest spot on the podcast that has shared, liked, commented, subscribed, and interacted with what we do. Big thank you. Let's get back to it.
I mean, it would be really interesting to get a sense of who's listening and what their business journey is. So can you give an example of someone's industry?
Let's say a startup that is new to media. They don't like that. Let's say it's a product industry, right? Perfect example being with what you've done here, right? Product industry, not service. And they're trying to build a know, like, and trust factor with that brand, or get people to have a know, like, and trust factor with their brand. Where do they start?
It's something that I think a lot of brands have leaned into, but smaller businesses might overlook something so obvious, which is anything that shows that user endorsement, customer testimonials. Mm-hmm. And the moment you can see real humans having a real experience with something, I mean, I'm celiac. So the moment I'm in a neighborhood with a bunch of looking for a good gluten-free mm-hmm. meal option, I'm going to jump on this app that I've got and look for anything with the most amount of ratings. I can't see any pictures of the thing. I can't get a sense of the branding to kind of know whether it's a good vibe. I'm just going to go to the one with the most ratings and find the best option that way. Similarly, whatever it is that you're selling, if it's a product-based service, I would, even though I'm all about aesthetic, like clearly on my Insta, let's get the Dan Brophy, let's get the Brophy Media Instagram back. this is enough. We've given enough plug to Daily Dog's Underwear.
Top one, Pat.
This is my personal one. Yeah, I've just recently scrubbed my entire Insta clean in favor of my coaching stuff now.
Still, we're seeing a pretty aesthetic feed here.
Yeah, like. Exactly. I'm all about the way something looks, only because for me, that's when I'm engaging with a brand, that's what hits me in the gut is how something feels. I'm all about color, and I love things that have a cleanliness to it. So I've like I was mentioning to you before, that
The goal planner.
The goal planner is this thing that I was so turned on, where I was like, hey, it looks like a target, but it also looks like an eyeball because it's a vision planner. Yep. Oh my God, that excites me so much, like as a graphic person.
Yeah, sick.
So I get turned on by design.
Yep.
However, even if you were someone who doesn't do design, they don't know design, you could have something that looked really ordinary. If you had enough testimonials from satisfied customers on something that looked like shit, you would have business.
Yeah.
Because people just need to be reassured that what they're investing their $2 or $200 in has, they can trust that they're going to get a return on investment that is going to not disappoint. Because no one likes being, I hate being taken for a ride. It's, you know. Have you ever been in a foreign country and jumped in a cab and you're like, this guy's going to rinse me?
Jeez. Absolutely.
my nightmare.
Yeah,
100%. I hate it. Even just, I'm like, I could give you $20 and just be done with it, but I
don't want to. Yeah, 100%.
So, you know, it's fool me once. Oh, shame on me.
Yeah.
Shame on you. I have this, similarly when it comes to you know, wanting to invest tokens of enthusiasm in anyone's brand, I just want to know that it's a worthwhile investment. So I would say that the moment you can put, even if you had the world's most ordinary social media situation, mm-hmm. a really lackluster like Wix website, mm-hmm. if it was just full of customer testimonials that were positive, you would convert because people just want to know that it's right. And so I know that until you can find a way to build up. And then what you need to be doing is going, how can I bake this testimonial retrieval into my user experience? So for example, if I'm someone who sells personal training service. If you give me a review, I will give you X amount percentage off your next batch of sessions. If you give me your review plus a picture of yourself, I will give you X amount plus 5% more off your thing. You know, whatever I can do to attach a real human face, ideally. Mm. If you give me a video of you talking about how much you love my services, I will give you 20% off your next batch of sessions. You know, a video testimonial of someone saying that they love your product that goes on your website, that's a real person who I can click through to see their Insta to know that they actually exist.
Yep.
Is very effective.
Man, I will 100,000,000% attest to that. And I'll come back to Hormozy as the perfect example of this. I don't know if you've looked into it, but back when he was running Gym Lords, I think it was called, or like, I think it was his whole done for you gym model, right? I found his old ClickFunnels sites, right? Man, all it is this shocking little photo of a person, their gym, so you know what it is and who it is, and a testimonial. It's just page, it looks like it's been written on a Word doc.
Yeah.
Right? It's a ClickFunnels site on a Word doc. It's so bad, but man, we're talking multi millions of dollars. He sold the company for $42 million and still acquired 33% of it. Like, we're talking Word documents.
Yeah.
And all it was testimonials, right? And that's it. And that, I think, says it all. If you can actually work that into your, like, I fully agree, man. If you can work that into your customer journey of just that.
I mean, if you walked, where I'm staying while I'm in Melbourne is just on Little Bourke, near Little Bourke. And if you walk down Chinatown and you see the Chinese restaurant that has the line of international students out the door, that's where you're going to eat. You know,
100%.
Like, it, you just need to know that other human beings endorse it.
Yeah.
Because even if it's, you know, even if your palate can't distinguish the flavors of that restaurant next to the one next door, the fact that you're eating in the full restaurant that you managed to get a table at is going to make you feel so much better.
Yeah, cool. Okay, let's talk about that. Feeling elicited from certain product and brand. Like, do you pay attention to emotional feeling when you're trying to create branding?
I mean, yes, and both. And I think it's got to be baked in and felt more than it is intellectually experienced. You know, it's almost like when you're experiencing a film that's really well made, you're not stopping to think necessarily until the multiple viewings, just how it's making you feel that way.
Absolutely.
The editing, the cinematography, the choices in music, the moment you're bored or the moment you're dissatisfied, you're like, fuck, this music is shit.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, this editing's a bit heavy handed. So the moment you're actually paying attention to the things that are giving you the experience, chances are they're not working in terms of giving you the dazzling experience that you need to feel seduced by it.
Yeah. You need to be immersed.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's not until you've been like, wow, that really landed. Why was that? You know, that you actually start to dissect it. So absolutely. I always want to bake in a feeling to everything that I'm creating. So I would say for people out there who are looking to branch out into content, you know, steal like an artist, look at the ways in which people who are, because I mean, in an ideal world, that could be something that you outsource once you've got the cash to be able to do something like that. You know, don't go and feel like you have to study and understand this to do it always. Just get yourself to a point at which you can generate enough income to be able to outsource that thing. But in the meantime, you can just make a little collection of 10 heroes that are nailing it as far as you're concerned. And it could even be, I always tell clients to do this when I'm about to go into a creative session with them. Between now and when we meet next week, start saving into Instagram or screen capturing and putting in your photo section anything you like the look of. Doesn't matter why you like it. We can discuss what's effective about it when we get together, but just build up a mood board of things that turn just you on gravitate, in some way. Because once you don't even need to know why. We can tend to dissect it later on, but sometimes it could be a color, a font style, how spacious something is visually, how full and how much of a kaleidoscope it is. It could be that it reminds you of something you loved as a kid, and there's an energy in that has resonance for you, which resonates with your brand's message. You know, there could be things that even, like, I love dissecting why something makes you feel a certain way.
Yeah, because chances are it's going to hit home like that with someone else too.
Yeah, and you're probably your target market in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like, most people who are listening to this probably service a community that is in one way or another them.
Yep.
And so it's safe to assume that if it hits you in the gut and you create something that has resonance for you, then your target market will hopefully be taken on the journey as well.
Yeah, it's either going to be like you are yourself part of your target market, or you've spent so much time around your target market that you know them and you can know what will kind of land.
Yeah.
And like, almost just like, oh, that will work with that person. It makes me feel this way, which means it will make that other person feel a certain way too.
Actually, if you're anyone who's listening who needs a workaround for that, if they are thinking, oh, I'm so different, I make this thing, I'm this person, my target market is so different to me, chances are you're making it for someone that you know quite personally, quite well. Mm-hmm. So for example, my dad is in aged care and he has run retirement homes since I was 5. Mm-hmm. And I realized he creates the experience that he really wanted to give his mum, but never got a chance to.
Yeah.
And so he makes
beautiful.
Every single resident in that retirement home, he treats like his mum. And
Lucky them.
The entire he's really a saint, and he does the most amazing creates the most amazing experiences for these beautiful elderly ladies, and it's chances are if you have a service or a product, you're making it for your sister or your brother or you as a kid. Everything that I'm making through my creative coaching business, I tell you who that's for. That is for me. In 2014, when I was stuck in a shitty job that I hated, that was corporate hell, and I thought to myself, I have to get out of here, but I just don't know how. Like, how do I work out how I want to, who I want to be, and like what I want to do with myself? And so I make work for people who are stuck creatively.
Yeah, preach that, man. That's so good. That's exactly why I got into business mentoring. Like, I look at the fitness industry as a whole. They're all so stuck, so broken, and just like, I made so many mistakes, wasted so much money. And that's exactly why, like, I got into it too, man. Like, just to help people and steer them away from the bullshit I went through. I think that's why any point, any position of leadership is very similar.
Yeah, and anyone who's probably, you know, the entrepreneurial journey is such a schlep. You have to really be driven by something more than just, you know, like the love of coin. Chances are there's something that's actually making you, that's moving you to do it and to work those hours and to give, you know, it'd be so much easier going to do a 9 to 5.
100%.
So the thing that's driving you is really probably a human need to service either someone that you know for realsies or someone that you've been for realsies. So, you know, it's making it, tailoring it for them allows you to cut through the noise to going, well, what does 25-year-old Dan really need? Or, you know, what would my mom really need at this time? And how can I tailor an experience that has value and serve that person at that stage in their journey?
100%, man. That's really cool. I like that. That's as far as just a thought-provoking process for everyone at home, like where to start. I think that's a really good place to build your base from. Can we go through a little bit of a framework of when you work with a new brand, what you kind of will try and identify, what's the, I guess, objective of that first initial consult and figuring out where you go? Because what we've gone through so far is that you want to look at like the actual avatar, the demographic of who they are. You want to then look at their client journey and what they're trying to do. Is there any sort of framework that you're looking at like, okay, well, these are the problems and this is where we need help?
That's a really delicious point, because whether I'm working with an individual or a team or a major corporation with like a round table of stakeholders, the first meeting has to be, what do we want? You know, what does success look like? Mm-hmm. Because if the goalposts keep moving, or if we're not in alignment as to exactly what this particular project is all about, and sometimes it's even about vomiting up all the ideas of what people think it might need to be, in order to then go, actually, you know, these 7 to 10 things have to wait until these three are done first. And actually this chapter, this next phase, I'm really all about, you know, phasing things. Mm-hmm. Because once, you know, 50% of solving any creative problem is knowing what you want.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole point of the vision planner. It's people in a state of flux who don't know exactly what to do first can't know what to do first until they know what they want, so that then they're able to work out what they need to do to get what they want.
Yeah.
So when it comes to me working with a company or a brand, I need to make sure that all the team, including the boss who's going to come in on the last meeting in the conversation and potentially throw a spanner in the works because he's like, or she's like, no, I thought we were going to do this.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, no, you know, like we all have to be aligned and on the exact same page as to what this particular project in this phase of the multi-phase journey is all about. And then once we know what we want and what success looks like and what we're going to do to get what we want is a lot easier to see. And in order for me to then know that I've done a good job, I need to have everyone aligned with, like, manage their expectations for what their time and their budget can achieve in relation to their intention.
Yes.
Because often the reason why I actually got into doing more than being just a gun for hire is because I was always on the receiving end of some concept that had been sold to a client by an agency who clearly never made stuff. So often I'd get the brief and I'm like, you want to do what in what length of time with what budget?
Yeah.
Like,
I've been victim to that. 100%.
And actually, you know, one of the things that I would always encourage young service providers in the content space to do is to just be really unbreakable with what you're able to, like, with what you are able to relay, that you're able to deliver based on time and money and concept. And so I was like, these guys don't have any idea what they're even asking to try and achieve. I'm going to come up with the concept and pitch it to clients directly based on what they're telling me that their needs are, their KPIs are.
And what they can do.
And then, I'll go, sometimes the concept will come to me and I'll say, well, from what I understand, like the nucleus of what you're trying to get across is this. I don't think that this is a very good idea given what we're working with time and money wise. But if what you need to show is this, then how about these three ideas which do the same thing, but it's actually achievable within what you're showing me you have to work with. But if what you're telling me is you really want this idea that the boss came up with while she was on the way to work this morning, then I will tell you now that you need to give me one more month and three times the budget. And you let me know where you sit in relation to me delivering this concept in regards to those things, but we certainly can't do it in less time or less budget.
Yeah. I was saying this to Pat the other day, is like when it comes to business, you've got three options, right? We can actually project this in sales calls, right? It's like we do it either fast, good, or cheap, right? You can only pick two though. Yes. Right. So you can either have fast and good, well, it won't be cheap, right? And you can have cheap and good, well, it won't be fast.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like managing expectations like that is really fucking easy when you build out like, okay, well, that's what you want to do, sure. But it's the beauty of but.
Mm.
What comes next?
And fast, good, and cheap is actually a really good thing for a service provider to remember, because you should always be two of those things at the very least for your clients.
Agree.
You should always be on budget and on time, or really good and on time, or on budget and really good.
Yes.
But don't ever just be one of those three.
Agree.
Fully. Ideally all three, but you know.
Yeah. Like, look, if you can position yourself in a market where you're fast, good, and free, the only way cheap to do that would be, cheap. Fast, good, and less expensive. The only way to do that would be, I guess, with a whole heap of tech and automation, but fuck, big product.
Or even just like fast, good, and on budget, because I feel like the moment people make cheap their gold standard, they will undercut themselves energetically to the point of which they'll end up just having tiny margins and tiny margins seems like a cute idea until you realize how much it starves the creative.
Oh, dude. So I've been there. I used to have an apparel company. We've still got it technically. We've just kind of put on pause. We're turning over really good rev, but like in fashion, margins are paper thin.
Mm.
And then when it got to a point of like just trying to turn things over faster, express shipping, pulling things overseas quicker, like these margins are getting smaller and smaller. And now it's like, fuck, this is just sucking all the oxygen out of the business. Not even from a monetary perspective. Like we had capital, but just like seeing cash flow and seeing margins both be so thin, the passion does dwindle.
Mm.
Like it can't be a passion product project forever.
And also you didn't get into it because it was your God's mission to deliver on that product for a client. You probably got into it because it allowed you got really turned on by playing in using some skill set that you have. Yeah. Or so it's about protecting that at the end of the day.
Yeah, massively. So back to this framework, man, like you're going to identify objective, what they actually deem to be possible and want to do. What's the next thing? Like, do you poke any holes in the ideas, or like, how do you, and if you do, how do you do so?
Oh, this is my 12:12 alarm. This is cute. I don't mind that this went off because this reminds me to think about who I want to be in 12 months time.
That's amazing. Cool. We'll talk about that in a sec, actually.
So after we have that conversation around getting aligned with exactly what we're looking to achieve, then the next phase after that is really, I suppose, I usually go away from those conversations in order to return with the documentation to get everyone. But once we've decided, you know, ideologically what we're trying to achieve, then it's really about me communicating how we're going to deliver the thing and what it's going to be like so that stakeholders can kind of sign off along the way.
Yeah,
so that's where pre-visualization and the ability to so that there's no surprises as things are developing, because also as well, you know, the idea gets germinated, and as it grows, based on any number of factors, what could be delivered can evolve.
Yes.
So it's really about making sure that process is mapped. So 100%. And I actually feel like client management is 75% of what I do.
Mm.
I think that the actual making of the thing is the most fun, of course, but the thing that stops it from being derailed along the way is actually Because this is the problem. What happens when you're dealing with a room full of people who don't get a chance to express themselves creatively, which is why I need to make vision planners to allow people to be more creatively expressive, is because when someone's stuck in like a business park and they finally have a chance to flex their creativity because they're the one signing off on something, it's the rush of blood to the head means that they just go buck wild and all of a sudden they want to live their creative director fantasy, and the ideas keep on evolving and changing based on, you know, what they'd like to, like some ad that they've seen and some, you know. And so it's about going, okay, once we're aligned on what the deliverables are going to be, it's my job as the executive producer or the, you know, the lead to be making sure that we're going to continue to be true to the thing we've decided on. And, you know, we've all got ideas, but ultimately let's save some of that magic for the next time you do a project, because we've already set, this train's already left the station.
Yeah.
And there's only so much that we can do to potentially evolve the concept once we've already set it into motion.
Especially when there's momentum. Like yeah. people get momentum, like, oh, whew, let's go, another idea. I can imagine
and also, like, there's so many stakeholders. There's so many, like, there's so many suppliers involved yeah. in a project usually. It's and I also find that education information process to let clients know they don't know how things are made, so they don't know whether the thing that they're requesting is an easy fix or, you know, really hard.
Yeah, another 6 months to the journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So talk to me about this 12-12 thing, man.
I did some beautiful work with a great coach that's a little bit more esoteric, a bit more in the sort of spiritual space, called Heath Myers. And about 2016 or so, I really feel like my life took a turn when I decided I wanted to see a business coach to get better at doing the thing, doing what I wanted to do, but didn't quite know what sort of business coach would be right for me. And so mm-hmm. I ended up finding a guy who was actually a yoga teacher at Rainbow Serpent, the like 5-day
you know,
techno festival, for those that are unfamiliar with it, who was doing a very embodied kind of Tibetan Kundalini yoga class that I just happened to wander through while following my nose around the festival. And afterwards he happened to just say, oh, and I'm a business coach as well. And I was like, well, if I'm ever going to see a business coach, I want it to be this guy.
He's the man, yeah.
Because he would really get all of me, not just like the most sort of stock standard version of what that thing is. And I'm someone who has been told since I was a kid by my dad, you should study business. And I was always like, no way, man, I'm a creative. Like, I'm not going to study business. But actually, as I got older, I realized how important having, you know, how creative business can be if you can harness the potential of it.
Yep.
And so then this amazing coach, every couple of years, I've reconnected with him and done either another module of training. And I joined like a think tank that he was offering a couple of months ago. And he just gave beautiful tools like this that just really can align you in your day, of all the great things that this great coach has imparted. And one of them is setting little alarms throughout the day. And I think he even recommends 12-12 as being the time, but it's just a nice way to go, all right, who do I want to be in 12 months' time? Okay, let me get a little image of that. What's the physical environment going to be like? What's the feeling that person's going to have? And so it just means that the choices that I'm making today aligning with that intention. And it's also nice to remember that you really are doing the work now that future you is going to be benefiting from. So it's a nice way to remember that it's to not be so siloed in your experience of the day-to-day, because it's got to be with the bigger, everything should be done with the bigger picture in mind.
So you've only taken on that, embodied that, I guess, practice in the last 3-4 months?
I've been embodying a version of that practice probably for 10 years, but I feel like no one's ever done. So you always end up having, it's so worthwhile checking in with books that you've read before or coaches you studied with to potentially do another module just to realign you with to remind you those things that you know intellectually, but you haven't really embodied them recently.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think is so great to remember. Even when I think about the work that I want to make for creatives, especially those that are showing up, you know, professionally, I sometimes think, oh man, it's all been said before. Is it really worthwhile? And I was like, yeah, but I never stop needing to be reminded of these things. So surely everyone else would be as well, because it's not like you are just done. You don't just actually end up going, I've read that book. I never need to practice that ever again. You know, it's such an ongoing process, and the information gets renewed for this new chapter of life. When you happen to reread the book this year versus 3 years ago that you first read it.
Yeah, you'll take either more or less. Like you're either going to learn new things or look at things you've learned previously and go, oh, no, I have a different filter now, a different lens. Don't like that anymore. So I have two questions then leading on from that. If we think back in retrospect to the person you were 12 months ago, are you now living the vision of what you would have wanted?
12 months ago, I mean, things always take so much longer than you think.
Of course.
So, you know, it's like when you're in high school and you think, yeah, man, by the time I'm 25.
I'm going to be a millionaire.
And then, I'm turning 40 at the end of this year. And
fuck off.
I know.
Dude, and I would not have picked that.
I know. Well,
yeah, wow.
Thanks. And I have so many examples of things that I just thought would be done.
Yeah.
And I would be, I mean, I just like, and not even done, but done by 10 years ago.
Yep.
And so the one thing that I'm reassured by is the fact that it does happen. It's just a much more sustained process. And what reassures me is I think about friends who leapfrogged to achieving the thing astronomically fast, and usually that thing doesn't even have meaning for them anymore. It's either boring or they're over it or they've blown up so quickly and then they're like they've got no joy in that process anymore. So it's actually, if you're doing it right, I think the joy in the process has to be the barometer of whether it's successful, because every single goal you've ever had, the moment you got it, get to sit on that joy for an hour. And then it's like, okay, next. And so the thrill of the chase, or the mere passion in the pursuit of the thing, is, I think, the number one value measure.
Okay, so then that leads to the second question. What are you currently in pursuit of? What's the next 12 months for Dan Brophy?
Yeah, I'm in pursuit of making this, you know, the two instances that we've looked at today, one of them was the agency where I show up as a director and an executive producer and a content guy. The next 12 months is me using all those skills that I've developed over 10, 15 years worth of telling other people's stories and making other people's dreams come true, to telling my own stories and making my dreams come true, which is to show up for creatives. Like, I believe that, you know, the closest thing I've ever known to like spirituality or like a religion is creativity. Mm. It's my true north. It's the thing that keeps me out of trouble. It's the thing that I go, oh, I do want to get smashed tonight, but I also really want to do that creative thing tomorrow. So I'm going to choose the creative thing because it actually has such resonance for me. And it, to me, feels like, this feels so high vibration. Like, it feels so important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about all the creatives out there who are stuck in jobs they hate, engaging in some sort of toxic behavior that's keeping them stagnant, you know, for example, you know, or anything that could be good in life.
Mm-hmm.
Food, sex, drugs, alcohol, whatever. All these things can be fab.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're using it as like a consolation prize as opposed to like celebrating life, then that's the thing that keeps you stagnant. And so, in order to then make the other choice, you have to have something better. You can't just say, hey, don't do that thing that you want to do. You have to say, and I've lived this experience. Yeah. So I'm like, well, I do want to do this thing, but I actually want that thing more. So I want to make work that encourages and inspires creatives to cultivate and harness and tap that energy into something that they really, that is transformational and empowering for those around them as well. And I think if I was to think about what that 12-month from me now version is doing, he's only existing in that space. Still, there'd be an agency. Still, we'd be making great work for people, but I'd be less in the business and more on the business and just having fun with being like a creative director, you know, blow in.
Yeah, 100%.
But ultimately just working, making work for creatives, working with creatives. And when I think about my vision for like what the dream is, and I hope I get to check in with you in the not too distant future and say, I'm doing it, is like me in a room in front of 5,000 people, just talking smack about what I really believe in. Having this conversation, but in front of a room full of people.
And keep a ticket for me because I'm buying one. I'll be there.
100%. Front row.
Yeah, 100%. All right, last words for any brands, some words of wisdom for any brands that are looking to get creative or come into the space and actually kind of just hit a home run with any branding.
I'd say you probably know more about how to create branding in the traditional sense, your brand ID and your brand's offering in terms of its digital output. You probably know more than you think. And it's probably about stepping back to look at the business and the offering objectively, and all that you know about your customer and all the ways in which you can serve and add value to your customer, and using that as the jump off point for everything that you do in the branding space.
Amazing, man. Where can people find you, what you do, and give yourself a little plug. Let's go.
It's all, I mean, look, Dan Brophy is on Instagram and the website, and you can get to the agency, which is just my surname, which is just Brophy. Brophy.media on Insta and Brophy.media on the web. But if you were to find Dan Brophy on any of the platforms, you'll be able to get your way to everything else.
Awesome, man. Thank you for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's been a good chat.
Good jam.
And for everyone at home, make sure you do go give Dan a follow. And I didn't get a chance to say today, actually, if you have got any value out of today, make sure you 5-star rate it, like, review, comment, and interact with us, because we do appreciate it. And of course, if you do want to get access to any of our case studies as far as business growth goes, they're going to be on the website. They'll be in the show notes. We'll see you soon. Bye.